This afternoon, we've got another Buddha land to visit. We're going into a different Buddha land. So we're going to leave Amitabha behind, and I'm just going to put up the screen with the mandala. So we've got our mandala, and we're truly in now. In a way, the mandala of the five Buddhas is the personification of our ideal, of the wisdom and compassion of enlightened mind. So we've gone through the boundaries or the fences of protection. We've moved through the flames that are on the outside. And they're kind of flames of transformation. And we sort of move through vajras, through reality, and we're entering the mandala. We've been to the Buddha land of Akshobhya in Abhirati and in Ratnasambhava's land in Srimat yesterday afternoon. And this morning we were in Sukhavati in the land of Amitabha. So we're moving now to the green Buddha, to Amoghasiddhi, which is the fourth sort of Buddha in that mandala, and he resides in the north. So what I want to do first is I actually want to invite you for a moment just to close your eyes whilst we make our transition into Amoghasiddhi's Buddha land. So if you just sit comfortably, maybe for a couple of minutes, and just close your eyes and just allow your imagination to go wild. After the last delicate rays of the setting sun have tinted the sky, night falls. You made your final journey, completing your circuit of the mandala into the north. A country of green pine forests. It is dark as you walk between the huge trees. In the forest, you can hear rustlings and cries. It would be easy to become afraid and turn back. But if you were to do so, you would never meet Amoghasiddhi, the Buddha of the Northern Realm, whose name means unobstructed success. You walk for hours with the whispering wings of owls overhead. Finally, at midnight, you emerge from the forest into a clearing. Ahead of you is a palace made entirely of jade and emerald. It towers into the air, vertical, a mass of roofs and pinnacles. You go forward eagerly and then stop. There is a gate to the palace. Yes, it is in the shape of a great bow, string uppermost. However, the gate is set high up in the smooth wall. Only an eagle could enter such a gate. As you stand, not knowing what to do, a great commotion comes from within the palace. rhythmic crashings. Suddenly, the bow-shaped gate lifts high, and like an arrow shot by a giant, something flies forth from the palace. It is a chariot, drawn by two strange figures. At first, they look like eagles with wings and tails. Then you see their hands and torsos are human. In their hands, they each hold a huge pair of cymbals, which they clash together as they fly. On the chariot seated on a green lotus seat is a dark green Buddha, clad in scarlet robes. The light from his body transforms the midnight scene so that everything is radiant and clear. His right hand is raised in a powerful gesture, which seems to banish the darkness and fears of the night. In his left hand sits a mysterious emblem, two diamond thunderbolts crossed and fused together. He hurtles over you, seemingly effortlessly. As he does so, the huge pines are transformed into a forest of jeweled trees. Has the green Buddha ridden out of his palace or into it? Have you been in his mandala, in his Buddha land, all along? Maybe when you open your eyes, you might rest them on a mugga city that appeared from the dark pine forest. So what we're going to do is we're going to explore for a moment a mugga city and just look into what he's got to teach us about the enlightened mind, what he can bring to us and let us know about the enlightened mind. So before I sort of go into the whole symbolism and imagery of Amoghasiddhi, I want to talk a little bit more about our experience and how our experience is all about this particular form and our bodies and our sets of circumstances. And in some ways, it is this body, this form, this, you know, us within this set of circumstances that we're trying to transform when we're practicing. And Buddhism is really about, it's practice-based. Transformation is practice based. So we're engaged in these practices and they help us to broaden our faculties. And often it's faculties that we didn't even know we had. So it can come a bit as a surprise what is kind of within the depths of us and what is within the wealth that is our bodies and is us at this point in time. So we were looking at the operation of how the mind-heart operates or how it works when we haven't got quite an enlightened mind, when we are still kind of working with the mind as is at the moment. And yesterday we talked about contact when we actually experience something like now I'm just sitting on a mat and I can feel the mat underneath me. I can feel the sort of, so I've got that contact of my clothing. And then straight away, there is a particular feeling tone. So it's quite pleasant to be on my cushion. If I really look at that experience, that immediate feeling, what arises out of that contact. And this morning, Ratnasambhava was talking about interpretation. So he was saying that straight away when we have that feeling tone, when we have a particular experience and we think pleasant or unpleasant, or maybe even neutral, neither this nor that, but immediately our mind begins to interpret and it begins to draw in particular judgment. And because we're in this, we've got this goggles of the self view that everything gets sifted through. Our interpretation is not quite pure. We don't see things precisely as they really are. So because of this self view, we might have a mistaken idea about having this fixed self view and things being fixed. So when we interpret what's happening, it's always sort of running through that particular sift or through those goggles of a mistaken fixed self view. And another process or another part of that process is volitional will. So because we've got a particular interpretation, straight away our mind moves in a particular direction. So this will, it's not just like a sort of reaction to a stimulus or like conscious desire, but it's almost like our mind constantly throws itself into the world. And often that kind of movement towards is very unconscious and instinctive. So this part of the process of how our mind works is we've got this energy that impels consciousness and it seeks out and involves itself with objects. So it's almost like the mind is really hungry all the time. So there is this hunger of the mind. And I don't know whether you ever feel that. I'd really like almond magnums. And vegan one as well. They started doing vegan ones. So I think I went the whole year without magnums when I've gone vegan. And now a vegan magnums are back on the scene. But you know, when I go to the shops and I'm passing the counter where the vegan magnums are, sometimes I think, come on, you know, you had one yesterday, you don't really need one today. But there is that total volition of, you know, before I know it, my hand is already in the icebox, basically going there. So it's that will, you know, habitually just going with that craving. Yeah. And this will, it's how our mind operates. It's very karma creating. So it's a point where we've got choices. We can choose whether we're kind of going in a sort of positive or negative, skillful or unskillful way. And we've got opportunity to change habits. You know, like when I'm conscious of that will and that movement towards that magnum box, you know, at that point I have a choice and I can kind of say, you know, do I want to eat magnum every single day? Because if I do that, it will, you know, it will have a particular effect. You know, so I might have a little bit of choice there and I can make change if I find that gap and if I'm sort of part of that, aware of that change or of that opportunity for change. So this is kind of very unenlightened sort of regular mind that I'm dealing with. And then I've got this aspiration to transform. And when you transform this will, what happens is you transform it into an all-accomplishing wisdom. So we had the wisdom of equality with Ratnasambhava. We had the wisdom of discrimination with Amitabha. So with Amoghasiddhi, we have this all-accomplishing wisdom and our mind is operating in slightly different ways. Amoghasiddhi is sometimes called the Buddha of action. He's part of the karma action family. And sometimes he's described as or translated as unobstructed success or spontaneous action. So he's very much a Buddha of action. And when we're talking about energy, imagine when all available energy is completely free and capable in moving in any direction, or it can move in all our directions at the same time. I'm really into Kung Fu, so sometimes I do watch these Kung Fu sort of manuals. And when I see some very accomplished masters of Kung Fu, what's incredible is when they do a particular movement, you can see energy moving in all directions at the same time. And it's just incredibly powerful. And you can even see that when you watch people doing a form, when they're doing a particular form. Another example I would think about that is when I watch people doing flamenco. I don't know if you've ever been to a sort of really high quality flamenco performance, and just that energy in the room, like it's interesting just having a memory of that. I've got goose pimples going over, you know, everywhere in my body. So imagine this energy moving in all directions at once, moving in any direction that is possible. So because that energy is totally and completely free. So Amoghe City is associated with air for that very reason. And we had Akshobhya associated with water, Ratnasambhava with earth, and Amitabha with fire. So Amoghe City is associated with air and actually with sound as well. And in terms of our kind of chakras, it's very much around the throat chakra with communication. And when people communicate, you can sort of judge the level of energy that's associated. You can see I'm very excited about Amoghe City just from the speech. I was thinking before this afternoon session, I thought I need to calm down so I don't shout at the computer, because I'm so excited about Amoghe City and just being in his land. So yeah. So Amoghe City is expression of compassion, and he is kind of the heart of all Buddhas. But where Amitabha was kind of coming out of the meditative depth with his compassion, what Amoghe City is doing is he's expressing that compassion. So it's very much volitional activity. It's a will to act, but that act is not egoistic. So it's almost like there is no ego involved in that. It's very altruistic. You could say that Amoghe City has got skillful means. Yeah. So he just knows what to do, and actually he does it. You know, he's definitely not an armchair critic. He's definitely in there with the action. And how this varies, how this all accomplishing wisdom is different to the will that we may experience, or certainly I do experience, is that with the will, sometimes there is energy going on, but my energy is going in different directions. You know, in the morning, I do want to meditate, and I also want to stay in bed, you know? So there is a friction going on, and that friction is a waste of energy, yeah? And again, there is some kind of duality. When we approach things from a dual perspective, we just have that tension and we have a waste of energy. So we just kind of, you know, it's like a bucket with holes. There's a lot of energy going on, but it's just seeping through the holes. It's getting wasted. So imagine with Amoghe City, it's like there is this appearance of friction and wasted energy. And that way of being, that's what Amoghasiddhi personifies for us, or that's what he embodies for us. So his action is very total and spontaneous. And the response is always spontaneous and creative. And it's because the whole of his being is involved in that action. Whole of the being is going in one direction. And that's why, you know, maybe the name Unobstructed Success is because, there is nothing in the way. And with Amoghasiddhi, it's like, I really like this because, I'm the manager of the center, West London Buddhist Center. And all the time I'm kind of thinking, right, what's our strategy? What is our action plan? We need an action plan for opening after COVID, during the COVID situation now. Now, Amoghasiddhi, no action plan needed. Yeah. It's because he doesn't have to work out best action because he's got this panoramic awareness in which you just act, you just aware of what is required, and there is nothing getting in the way. Working out, is this going to work for this person? You just see the connection, you see the bigger picture, you don't see that duality with all accomplishing wisdom. So kind of goes with some of the symbols that you might have seen. Maybe I'll just show the picture once more for a moment. So he doesn't have just one single vajra, but he's got a double vajra, actually. So the double vajra is two diamond thunderbolts crossed, and they're made out of pure crystal. So when we were talking about, I'm just trying to think who we were talking about. Akshobhya. We're moving through them so quickly that I've just even forgot the name. So when we talked about Akshobhya and his Vajra, we just saw what an awesome power and force there was. Because with that vajra, you can cut through anything. And when you cut through things, the vajra remains unaffected. So imagine with double vajra, all those qualities are totally reinforced. And the double vajra is actually a symbol for psychic integration. So you got an unfoldment of all potential. Something like perfect harmony, perfect balance, perfect equilibrium. And it comes about because Amoghasiddhi sort of goes into the depths. You've got to go into the depths in order to encounter the depth. And then out of that depth, integration can take place because you need to see what's there and you need to be able to be or bear witness, shine awareness to that. And out of that, things can transform. So in some ways, he is associated with midnight and the midnight sky. And the midnight sky is a bit like the deepest unconscious of our mind. And it can, Amoghasiddhi, even with the double vajra, you've got the unification of opposites. So in some ways, you've got the universal on one hand, but you also have the individual, and it's almost like it merges, it gets unified through that all-accomplishing wisdom. And even with the unification or having merging of the opposites with Amoghasiddhi, even the birds that we had that were sort of the half bird, half human, that was coming out that we heard at the beginning. Again, you can have this mythical sort of combination of animal and a human. And again, it's very sort of, Amoghasiri is one of the most mysterious of the Buddhas that, that we've got. So it's all coming from that depth of, of the unconscious. And the, you might be thinking, what's this about? You know, what's that right hand sort of holding up? And that gesture is very powerful gesture of the right hand. And that it's, we've got the hand outwards, sort of at the level of the heart. It's pointing skyward. And it's an Abhaya Mudra. So it's a gesture of fearlessness. And that fearlessness removes terror and fear. So we've got the color green, and that's kind of very soothing, relaxing, peaceful, tranquil. And at the same time, we've got this transformation of all aspects of our beings, and that creates this total fearlessness. Because when we know our demons, when we know what we're facing, you know, it's not necessarily as scary anymore at that point. But unless we're really willing to look into what scares us, what's you know, lies beneath, it's very difficult to make transformations and to allow for total integration to take place. So that gesture is very sort of the fearlessness gesture. It's very powerful. And you've got true fearlessness because Amoghasiri sees into the nature of reality and he's able to see beyond the ego. And with him, it's as far as going as facing death, you know, having that fear of death that, well, I certainly, when I really, really ponder death, you know, for me, fear will arise. So for him, it's even working with the most fearful sort of facing the most fearful things. And the double Vajra also represents that fearlessness. So you've got that full balanced development of all sides of ourselves. If we want to grow and transform, it's really important that we look at all our different faculties and develop all sides of ourselves, because only then there can be that integration and that can be that development. And I was thinking about it a little bit in terms of Achilles heels. You know, it's really important to know, I suppose, first what our Achilles heels are. But then if we start turning our attention to that, we can actually work with that. And then because we know what our weaknesses are and because we work on those, what happens out of that is fearlessness can arise because there is nothing to fear at that point anymore. So Amoghasiri's path is very much a path of overcoming fear. And in terms of poisons, you might wonder what poison he might transform. Well, it's the poison of envy. So with Akshobhya, it was hatred. With Ratnasambhava, it was pride. With Amitabha, greed. And with Amoghasiri, is envy. And again, you've got that union of opposites, even within envy. You know, envy is when you've got craving and hatred and resentment combined together. And out of that, envy arises. But if you're really able to look within and to sort of go inwards and mobilize your own resources, you're actually able to look deep and see the illusionary nature of what you're doing with envy. Because you're actually looking at the external world, you're making comparison with others and you really want to succeed, but you think it needs to look like somebody else or what somebody else is doing. So if you're able to look within, into the depths, you're actually able to see your own beauty, your own resources, your own sort of treasures that are within you. And from that, envy can be transformed. So that's sort of the land of Amoghe City. And what we're going to do now is I want us to meditate for about half an hour, where we're going to work with one of the, you know, work potentially with envy, and we will kind of carry on because we've done quite a lot of metta bhavanas today, cultivating loving kindness. So we'll carry on out of that and bring that to our meditation so we can work on rejoicing in other people and bring metta, combining metta with qualities, appreciating qualities in other people. And out of that, what can arise is this beautiful state in which we delight in others. So that's what we will practice for the next half an hour. And after that, we'll have groups. And after that, we'll have a ritual. So if you prepare yourself for a period of meditation, just in your own time, just getting into the body. Always find it a bit helpful to kind of check myself on the chair or on the floor so I can find a place where the spine is quite naturally poised, when the shoulders are kind of rested down. And arms supporting, so you don't need to strain at all. And just drawing your attention to your breath. Maybe feeling the foundation, the sensations. As you breathe in, and even feel the sensations underneath your nose as the air is coming out. Just noticing the feeling tone as the air comes through your nostrils. Is it pleasant? Is it unpleasant? Notice any holding, especially around the eyes. In the belly. In the groins, in the shoulders. Letting go. Letting the earth support you. Just bringing your attention to your chest area, to your heart. Just broaden that awareness around the heart. So we think of it from the front side. Maybe there's a space at the back. And even have the sense of the heart beating. Just knowing you've got everything that's needed right now. You've got breath, and the heart is beating. You can be like a tree. Taking your space. And as a tree, your roots could connect to loving kindness. That's just everywhere in this world. Just letting loving kindness to flood your heart. To flood your heart and mind and your whole being. With each breath, in each pore is porous for loving kindness to fill you down to the bone. Just having this kind attitude to yourself. Allowing yourself to dwell in loving kindness. maybe you can bring to mind someone who's very emotionally positive, who's very skillful in their actions. Somebody that, if they come to your mind, immediately you feel delight for them to be in your presence and you to be in their presence. Maybe rejoice in their qualities. Allowing metta, allowing loving kindness to meet this rejoicing in their qualities. Letting that person dissolve. Seeing whether you're in touch with the metta, with loving kindness. Bringing to mind a friend. Bringing to mind the qualities that you appreciate about your friend. Notice if there is any comparing going on. And just bringing loving kindness to that. And trust and confidence. Everybody's qualities can shine in their own unique ways. And bringing to mind maybe that person, the neutral person that you had in mind in our previous meditation. And just getting in touch with that loving kindness. Maybe a bit more imagination about their qualities. Be just the friendliness of people's eyes in the shop. Somebody holding a door for you. Rejoicing in the person's positive qualities. Seeing that person dissolve. You're just connecting to your heart. Loving kindness, metta.
Flooding your body again, your heart, your mind. And when you're ready, bringing your person that you feel in disagreement with, you find difficult. Bringing them to mind. Maybe imaginatively finding their positive qualities, qualities other people see in them. Letting your attention dwell on those qualities. In the context of our loving heart. This last stage, bringing all people together, a positive person from first stage, your friend, person you might not know as well, and the difficult person. And just rejoice in their qualities. Bringing to mind their qualities. I'm trying to equalize. Though different qualities, they all have positive qualities to rejoice in. Just broadening that to other people. Bringing to mind people from this retreat and their positive qualities. And expanding that further into the world. Bring the practice to an end. Just hearing the noises in your area, where you are in your space, the sounds. Opening your eyes when you're ready. And we've got an opportunity to go into our groups. Hopefully Ratnadeva will have sorted out with groups. So we'll be in groups for 20 minutes and you have an opportunity to, well, discuss whatever arisen for you in response to Amoghasiddhi land. So you might think about whether you're on the path of fearlessness. You might think about where you are with transforming envy. You might discuss your practice that we've just done now. So you've got 20 minutes and we'll meet then. And Ratnadeva will give us 5-minute warning, please, before.
Hello, Louise. I'll just allocate you to a
group two. Group. I just hit the wrong button.
Okay, group two.
Sorry, that was over. Thanks.
Forget to press the recording. Oh my God.
Just find a posture that will support you in this particular practice and in your own time. May you find it helpful to close your eyes. Just getting in touch with both you and your body here and now. And also drawing inwards into the sensations within the body, your breathing, your heart. Ritual to Among the City and fearlessness within our hearts and minds. Turning to the north at the midnight hour, I bow to the dark green light of the Buddha Amoghasiddhi, Master of the Universe. You appear from a mighty crystal Vishvantra, the basic pattern of reality. You sit on a pale green lotus, clad in scarlet robes. Your body is made of mysterious green light. In your left hand sits a golden double vajra. Your right hand is raised, palm outwards, in a gesture of supreme courage. Master of the Universe, your great love and fearless action transform the sufferings of the Titans and overcomes the poisons of envy. You fear nothing, and so are free to act spontaneously for the benefit of all, accomplishing all good works. Your courage releases the energy caught in the oppositions of light and dark, self and other, life and death. You are as free as the air element blowing through the forests and around the mountain heights of your northern realm. Master of the universe, help me to face my own fear. To look into the darkness of my own mind and transform the demons within. O Amoghasiddhi, help me to be free of restriction, free of fear, free of duality, and release in me the energy of my untamed mind. Om Amoghasiddhi Ahum. Om Amoghasiddhi Ahum. Om Amoghasiddhi Ahum. Om Amoghasiddhi Ahum. Om. Om Namo Gurudeva 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 Om. Om Amoghasiriya Hum. 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 Om Amoghasiriya
So that brings our session to the end. So thank you very much for entering this fearless realm of spontaneous action. And Amoghasiddhi's realm is the midnight realm. So you've got all the way to midnight to dwell in that realm and enjoy that time. So it'll be lovely to see you all tomorrow for our morning meditation at 8 o'clock. And do feel free to unmute. Yeah.